I'm not generally one to throw around a lot of catchphrases, I don't think, or buzzwords like countercultural. And it may be a generational thing. I'm sure it is. And I'm sure it's my thing. And if you use words like countercultural around me, I've already spoken to you and it's fine. But I tend to be a little suspicious when I hear this kind of thing. Countercultural. It seems to me maybe that one is trying a little hard to be cool, especially when one is self-describing as countercultural. Again, it might just be me, and if so, that's fine. But I think that the term countercultural is sometimes entirely appropriate, and I think it's entirely appropriate when we're talking about people of God, people of Christ, serving and being servants. Our culture, like most cultures throughout history, espouses the look out for yourself ethos. This is how we live. All you need to do is take a drive around the city during any rush hour to understand what I'm talking about. James Bryan Smith puts it like this in his book, in the book that is sort of guiding us as we go through these 6 weeks. He writes this. He writes, one of the most dominant narratives is built on self-preservation, personal happiness, and making sure our goals are met. He goes on, this narrative is not only for individuals, but it can also be the foundation for a community. And you see this worked out in individual ways. I gave the example of driving, and really, I mean, it doesn't even need to be rush hour. It can be any time. You see this sort of thing. People looking out for themselves. You see it worked out as well in organizations, as in the primary purpose of our organization is to grow. Our primary purpose as an organization is to grow in power, in influence, in income. Power is valued above all else. We see the same thing in nations, where things like trade are viewed as a zero-sum game, and winning is indeed not everything, but the only thing. And it's all about winning, and we don't win anymore. And this is the kind of thing that you hear in public discourse. So the question for us then becomes, what does it mean as people who follow Christ? What does it mean to win? What does it mean to win when our God is a servant? And this is the truth that we're looking at this morning, friends. That our God is a servant. And this is what I want us to sit with for these moments this morning. And as we've been saying throughout these weeks, any talk of who we're called to be or what we're enabled to do is predicated, is based on what God is and what God does. And we must always keep this uppermost in our minds. Because this issue of power is an age-old one. It was an issue for the disciples. Who would be the greatest among them, they asked. Who would occupy the positions of honor? And it seems reasonable. I mean, who doesn't want to be the greatest? This is what we do when we make things all about ourselves. We compare ourselves to others, and we see ourselves either more favorably, or we see ourselves coming up short, and we can become prideful on the one hand. If we're seeing ourselves more favorably, we can become prideful, or we can become resentful if we're comparing ourselves to others and coming up short. And we do it as individuals. We do it as churches even. We say, why can't we be doing as well as them? Look at their numbers. Look at their budget. Or conversely, we say, oh, we're doing much better than them. Look at their numbers. Look at their budget. We compare. And the disciples are talking about this. And we read that Jesus is aware of their inner thoughts. And he takes a child. This was the first reading that Sarah read to us from Luke in Luke 9. And it's important to note this. I love this scene, first of all, of Jesus taking a little child and putting it in the middle of them. Children were among the least of these, most definitely, in Jesus' day. Their opinions were not sought. Children did not have a say in where one would vacation in Jesus' day. the task of raising a child was thought to be a menial one. So Jesus takes this child and he says this, whoever welcomes this child in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. For the least among all of you is the greatest. So what did this mean? What did this mean? This was new. This was something new. And it was a hard lesson to learn. The disciples were not through learning it. In fact, some chapters later in the second reading we heard this morning, they're all at the Last Supper. And the same dispute arises, we read, at the Last Supper, a dispute also arose among them as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. And Jesus says to his followers, he says, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, the greatest among you must become like the youngest, and the leader like one who serves. For who is greater, the one who is at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one at the table? Jesus asks, but I am among you as one who serves. This is important. Our God is a servant. Our God is a servant, friends. He took the form of a slave. Our God took the form of a slave. And this wasn't a disguise that he put on. This isn't like the old story of the king who dresses down in peasant clothes to see what's going on. This is what God's love looks like when God takes on human form. No one has greater love than this, Jesus says, but to lay down one's life for one's friends. This is what servanthood meant for God. It meant sacrifice. It meant humbling himself. And God is humble. Someone has said that God is humble enough to let us reject him. We must never forget that when we're thinking about God and the nature of God, that God is humble. It hurts to be rejected. And to love unconditionally means that we are inevitably going to be hurt. And Jesus' death and resurrection showed that there is no hurt, not even death, from which God is unable to bring life. And this is good news. Our God is a servant, friends, and in this is love, and in this is life. And the community of God, of which we are a part, is called to serve, to show and tell of this love by our deeds and by our words. We don't exist for self-propagation. Our primary job together here in this faith community is not to ensure the continued existence of Blythewood Road Baptist Church. Although we think that its existence is good and vital, and we work to keep it going, of course we do. But it's not our primary goal. Our primary goal is rather to reflect Christ's love. Our primary goal is to reflect Christ, to serve. We don't engage in ministry primarily with the idea that we don't engage in ministry primarily with the goal of it increasing our numbers. This is not what we do. Although, as I always like to say, we like a good number. Of course we do. My voice cracked a little bit there. We like a good number. I'm talking about our primary purpose. In his book, James Brian Smith tells a story. It's from his university days. He's a university chaplain in this story. And a local church hires him to start a Sunday school class. It's not the church that he's a part of. It's another church. And they say, James Brian Smith, would you start a Sunday school class for university students, for undergrads or college kids, as they call them in the States? And he does so. And about a month later, he gets a phone call from the pastor of the church. And the pastor of the church says, there's a problem. None of the young people, none of the students are staying for our service. Once your class is gone, they're all leaving. So he talks to some of them. He didn't even know that they were leaving because, of course, he was going off to his own church after the class. He says, what's going on? And they say, well, we went a couple of times and we didn't feel particularly welcome. and the worship wasn't particularly compelling, and it's just not our thing. And after a little while, the church canceled the class. They said, well, we're not doing this anymore. This is not going to be something we're going to do. And he goes on, he says, not long after that, another church called about something very similar. And they were an older congregation, small congregation, who felt that they might have something to pass along to younger people. And they were thinking about undergrads, and they asked Smith how they could meet the needs of local students. They said, how can we meet the needs of some of the local students around here? And Smith said, well, students like food. They like things that are free because, you know, students don't have a lot of money. He said they like to be welcomed warmly because many students are living far from home. So this church started to put on a lunch after service regularly, and Smith went. He invited some of his student friends to come along with him, and they kept coming back. The point is, this church wanted to know how they could serve. This was their primary concern. They wanted to know how they could serve, in this case, students. And of course, we have our own stories about this here at Blythe, don't we? We have our own stories about this, which have become a part of our community's story. Out of the Cold was started over 20 years ago. And while I wasn't here personally, I know that the primary goal of Out of the Cold was not to increase our membership rolls or increase Sunday morning attendance. In fact, it might be argued that it did the opposite. But this was not the point. And this is not to say that everybody's not welcome here, again, and we don't like a good number. Don't get me wrong. But the primary goal was and still is to show Christ's love in tangible ways. The primary goal was to show Christ's love in tangible ways to those whose society considers the least of these. And think of the lives that have been touched through the years. Think of the partnerships that have been formed over 20 years. Think of the myriad ways in which God's love has been made known and continues to be made known. This is what it looks like to serve. These are our stories. Consider the Lawrence Heights summer camp. I remember the first time the team came from Murfreesboro, and I was meeting with them before the week started. And we told them, we said, don't measure the success of the week based on how many children come to the camp. And we didn't know at the time how many children would show up. We had no idea. I said, don't base the success on the number of children, but rather base it on how well you show and tell of the love of Christ to these children. And 6 years on, this is going to be our seventh summer of this ministry, and all these years on, look at the number of lives that have been touched year after year. Look at the people who have come to help us and how they've been blessed. We're called to go out and serve as individuals as well. I'm talking about things we do together. But we're called to go from this place and serve as individuals, not because it's a high moral standard, or not because it's a high ethical standard, but because the King of Kings that we follow is a servant. Because the King that we follow so loved the world that he gave his only son for. And as we go about this task, friends, we need to be asking God in our prayers, we need to be praying to God to give us eyes to see the world as he sees it. We need to be praying to God to give us hearts to love the world as he loves it. We need to be asking the Holy Spirit of God to be enabling this in us, because we need this. We can't do this on our own. We need this empowerment. We need to continue to serve because God continues to enable it in us. We didn't start Out of the Cold to end homelessness, although we would like it to be over, of course. But if that was our goal, we'd get discouraged, wouldn't we? We'd get discouraged when we didn't see it ending, and we say, why are we doing this? We're in this service thing, friends, as followers of Christ for the long term. I always like to say we can't do it on our own. We need to ask the Holy Spirit to teach us to love. And our acts of service, friends, that are born out of love, they needn't be spectacular. John Vanier, who started the L'Arche community here, he said this. This is a good quote from John Vanier. Love doesn't mean doing extraordinary or heroic things. It means knowing how to do ordinary things with tenderness. It's good. It means doing ordinary things with tenderness. And to be able to serve, friends, is to know our own worth in God's eyes. Not to be proud about our station or position. To be able to see ourselves as God sees us. To know that our sense of self-worth comes because we're beloved by God. And not because of any of the things the world uses to judge people's worth. We're then able to look at others and see their inherent value and their inherent worth. As people, as men and women who are made in the image of God, and men and women who are loved by God, and children too. Vanier again says this, to love someone is to show them their beauty, their worth, and their importance. Note that Christ taught in our story this morning, friends, how service would be shown. He taught that service would be shown, that love would be shown through the welcome given to those who our world thinks of as the least of these. In the case of the story, it was a child. We don't welcome people because we see them as projects. We don't welcome people because we see them as projects. That we can save, people that we can save. On the other side, we don't welcome people based on seeing them as assets, a sense of what can they do for us. We don't do this. Rather, we welcome people because they're made in the image of God and they're beloved by God. And as we close and we're thinking of service, I just want to point out and remind us not to forget the part about seeing ourselves as God sees us. Let us not forget that the command to love our neighbor is coupled with the command to love ourselves. The possibility of burnout in this thing is all too high. And this is not just for ministry professionals. It's for everybody. And there's no end to the activity we could be doing, right? You're all aware of it. There's no end to the activity we could be doing, but I don't think that we're called to neglect ourselves. I don't think we are. We don't need to work like everything depends on us, because it doesn't. This is freeing. We just don't. We need to be looking after our bodies as well as our souls. We need to be taking time to rest. We need to be taking time for recreation. Smith talks about this in his book too. He says, I have many Christian friends who are so focused on serving others that they neglect their own needs and sometimes the needs of their families. One woman confessed that she had burned out and left the church when she was younger because she was told that serving others was our constant duty as Christ followers. So she did, and she found herself worn out and discouraged. Another man, Smith goes on, shared that for many years his own family only got my leftovers because I spent all of my energy caring for people and neglected them. So this is something to remember too. As I always like to say, we need to make sure that we're getting things right here before we're going to be getting them right out there. And we need to be asking God to help us get this service thing right. Starting with those closest to us. And this is a request that God will honor, I'm sure. I'm sure it is. Because our God is a servant, friends. Our God humbled himself even unto death. So may God continue to create that same sense of servanthood in us, so that God's ways may be known in us, among us, and through us as we go from here. God grant that this may be true for each and every one of us. Amen.